I'm doing something different this quarter. In decades of preaching, I've never done this before, but I'm teaching a class from someone else's work. This is Stafford North's class he put together for Oklahoma Christian University's e-Bible study. And I was looking through my notes for Daniel, and I found this that I had saved, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago. And I thought, well, let me look at that. And I took a look at it. Man, that's a great study. I think I will use that. One of the things Stafford does that I really like in his worksheets is repetition. He'll ask about the same things, and you'll be filling out the same answers in blanks over and over. So by the time you finish with the worksheet, there are, I won't say several, but there's a handful of things you will almost certainly have nailed down because you have read it and written it several times. I like that technique. And, well, I've always admired and appreciated Stafford's teaching. How many of you knew or knew of Dr. Stafford North? Oh, great. Okay, so he's got a reputation among us. He's always spoken well and done well and written well. And so I'm looking forward to this class. And just to study Daniel in any way is, to me, fascinating. We get the subtitle for this class is Glimpses of the Kingdom. And you'll see what we're talking about regarding that as we go through the class. Let's do a little reading to get started. Let's read the first chapter. And for that, I need three readers. And after we read the first chapter, we'll go through the worksheet. Now, not every answer in the worksheet is going to be answered in the first chapter. As a matter of fact, there's going to be a lot of extra stuff, but we'll talk about that. But I do need three readers to start. Excuse me. I need somebody for 1 through 7. There's PJ's back, and she's going to read for it. Look at that. She comes right in and volunteers just like she always did. And then the 8 to 13. Okay, Judy's got 8 to 13, and let's finish up chapter 1 with 14 to 21. Who would like to read 14 to 21? All right. We got Larry's going to pick up the last bit there, and we'll finish reading Daniel. Let me give you just some little bit of context before we start the reading. And we'll go through this in the worksheet as well. But just so as you're reading this, if you're not familiar with Daniel, you'll have an idea. You know that the kingdom split when Solomon died. His son took over, and there was a lot of upheaval, and the kingdom split because he was going to be a lousy ruler and overtax his people. And so the kingdom split. It had been united for 120 years under Saul, David, and then Solomon. And now it's splitting. And so there are 10 tribes essentially to the north called Israel. And the southern two tribes, Simeon's down there land-wise, but it's really just Judah and Benjamin. Those are going to be called Judah or Judea later. In 722 B.C., 722 years before Jesus is born, as we count that time, the Assyrian nation will come into northern Israel, or the 10 tribes, and take them off into captivity. God allowed this to happen. He actually brought the Assyrians because the Israelites were so idolatrous. And so this was judgment against them, and they went off into Assyrian captivity in 722 B.C., about 120 years, almost 120 years later, in 606 B.C., Nebuchadnezzar came on Judea and Jerusalem for the same reason. They had strayed from God. They'd lost their faith. They were worshiping idols. They were immoral towards one another in their behavior. And so Nebuchadnezzar came. But Nebuchadnezzar came in three waves. And each time he came, he took captives back to the land of Babylon. And the final trip back to Judea and Jerusalem, he destroyed Jerusalem, demolished the temple and the walls. And so that is what the context is. And Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, later Ezekiel, these are carried off into Babylonian captivity. And so that's where we're picking up in the first chapter of the book of Daniel. All right, readers, thank you for volunteering. Let's read.
Gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the vessels of the house of God, And he brought them to the land of Shinar, to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels into the treasury of his God. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, the chief of his officials, to bring in some of the sons of Israel, including some of the royal family and of the nobles, youths of whom was no defect, who were good-looking, showing intelligence in every branch of wisdom, endowed with understanding and discerning knowledge, and who had ability for serving in the king's court. And he ordered him to teach them the literature and language of the Chaldeans. The king appointed for them a daily ration from the king's choice food and from the wine which he drank, and appointed that they should be educated 3 years, at the end of which they were to enter the king's personal service. Now among them, from the sons of Judah, were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Then the commander of the officials assigned new names to them, and to Daniel he assigned the name Belshazzar, to Hananiah Shadrach, to Mishael Meshach, and to Azariah Abednego.
We almost had stereophonic sound there.
But Daniel made up his mind that he would not defile himself with the king's choice food or with the wine which he drank. So he sought permission from the commander of the officials that he might not defile himself. Now God granted Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the commander of the officials. And the commander of all the officials said to Daniel, "I am afraid of my lord, the king, who has appointed your food and your drink. But why should he see your faces looking more haggard than the youths who are your own age? Then you would make me forfeit my head for the king." But Daniel said to the overseer, whom the commander of the officials had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, "Please test your servants for 10 days, and let us be given some vegetables to eat and water to drink. And then let our appearance be observed in your presence, and the appearance of the youths who were eating the king's choice food, and deal with your servants according to what you see."
He listened to them in this matter and tested them for 10 days. At the end of 10 days, their appearance seemed better and they were fatter than all the youths who had been eating the king's choice food. So the overseer continued to withhold their choice food and the wine they were to drink and kept giving them vegetables. As for these 4 youths, God gave them knowledge and intelligence in every branch of literature and wisdom. Daniel even understood all kinds of visions and dreams. Then at the end of the days which the king had specified for presenting them, the commander of the officials presented them before Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked with them, and out of them all, not one was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's personal service. As for every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king consulted them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and the conjurers who were in all his realm. And Daniel continued until the first year of Cyrus the king.
All right, thank you all for reading. This gives you some idea of the circumstances under which these 4 young men were now living in a foreign nation. But before we proceed to the worksheet, I want to do a brief reading for you from Jeremiah. Jeremiah. Let's see. Where are we going with this? 52, Jeremiah chapter 52. Jeremiah was one of the prophets God had sent to try to turn his people back from their evil. And he prophesied about 70 years of captivity, but in this latter chapter, Jeremiah provides us some information about how many Israelites were taken into Babylonian captivity. So pick up with me there at chapter 52 of Jeremiah, verses 12 to 16. It says, "Now on the 10th day of the fifth month, which was the 19th year of King Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar, the captain of the body, or Nebuzaradan, that's who it is. That sounds like some kind of a medicine, doesn't it? Doctor prescribed me some Nebuzaradan. I had the Babylonian scales or something, I don't know. The captain of the bodyguard, who was in the service of the king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem. He burned the house of the Lord, the king's house, and all the houses of Jerusalem, even every large house he burned with fire. So all the army of the Chaldeans who were with the captain of the guard broke down all the walls around Jerusalem." And I said down to 16, so let's go a couple more. "Then Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, carried away into exile some of the poorest of the people and the rest of the people who were left in the city, the deserters who had deserted to the king of Babylon and the rest of the artisans. But Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, left some of the poorest of the land to be vine dressers and the plowmen." All right, then same chapter down to verse 28. "These are the people who Nebuchadnezzar carried away into exile in the seventh year, 3,023 Jews. In the 18th year of Nebuchadnezzar, 832 persons from Jerusalem. And in the 23rd year of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, carried into exile 745 Jewish people. There were 4,600 persons in all." So this is Jeremiah's record of how many Jews of note were carried into captivity. What they would typically do was when they'd conquer a nation, they would find out, well, who have they got that's capable? We do the same thing today. Our space program. Who was at the heart of our space program? Anybody know? A fellow by the name of Wernher von Braun. What's he famous for? He developed the V2 rocket that Germany was launching over into England. He was a leader in their program for rockets, and so when the war was over, World War II, we brought him on into NASA. So that's the kind of thing they do, and that's what the Babylonians were doing. We got some talented people here. We're not just going to go in and wipe them all out. We're going to take them with us and train them in our culture, in our language, in our ways, and let them work for us. Quality people are hard to find. Still true, isn't it? I've talked to people who have businesses and employ people, and they're saying today this is one of their biggest problems. It's just finding people who you can rely on to train and do the work. Bud?
I was talking to some of the people that work out at Taker Field, and they said that is a still ongoing program, that if they have people that can do that, they put them to work.
It's smart, too. That makes sense. If you got somebody with the talent, put it to work. Yes, absolutely. All right. Who's ready to get to the worksheet? Nobody? All right. Well, let's do something else. To the worksheet. Here we go. When the story of Daniel begins, blank is in his third year as king over blank. Jehoiakim, and that's right there, reading as Daniel begins, first verse, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of what? Judah. So Jehoiakim was in his third year as king over Judah when they were attacked by the Babylonians. This was in the year 606. That's not in the text of Daniel, but that's the year it was when the first attack came, was in 606 BC, 606 years before Christ. The kingdom of Judah included only two of the 12 tribes, blank and blank. Which two tribes would you put in there? Judah and Benjamin. The other 10 tribes were carried away by the blanks. Who carried off the 10 northern tribes? Who carried away Israel? Assyria. Not Syria, but Assyria. And that happened in, anybody got the date? 722 BC. This northern kingdom was taken into captivity because they followed idols. They were idolatrous. That was initially how they were kept from going back to Jerusalem, because the law had three feasts that annually the men were supposed to go back to Jerusalem, at least the men. And so Jeroboam, who was taking away the 10 tribes, said, if I don't do something, they're going to keep going to Jerusalem and I'm going to lose everybody. So to stop that, he put an idol-centered worship in the north and an idol-centered worship in the south. So people began to go to those centers of idol worship rather than to Jerusalem. And that's how he changed the thinking of the people. Of course, who has to allow that to happen? See, if you were an individual and you were thinking, I'm going to be faithful to God, I'm going to Jerusalem. Well, that didn't happen enough for things to change. That's always what it comes down to. Leadership has a responsibility, but so does every individual. Where are we here? The Assyrians were destroyed by the blanks. That'd be the Babylonians in 612 BC. So 6 years before Nebuchadnezzar's first incursion into Jerusalem, they wiped out the Assyrians. You didn't know this was going to be a class on world history, did you? Number two, the kingdom of Judah had also worshipped idols. Not as much, but they did. Although some of their kings had been faithful. God predicts that because of their blanks, what would you put in that blank based on idol worship? Sins. Some of their sins. Iniquities. Of course, iniquities would take a longer line. Sins is nice and short. They will be taken into captivity. They would go away into, where would they be taken? To Babylon. Go away into Babylon. And after, who knows how many years it would take for them to return? 70 years, prophesied by Jeremiah. After 70 years, they will be allowed to return to their land. Nebuchadnezzar begins to fulfill this prophecy when he comes against blank in blank BC. And this is repetition. When he comes against Judah, and when did he first come against Judah? 606. This is the repetition I was telling you about that Stafford does in the worksheet. By the time you're finished with this, you're going to know. Number three, to review. In 722 BC, the kingdom of blank was taken into captivity. Who was taken into captivity in 722? Israel by the Assyrians. Give you a little bit of time to write that out. Sometimes I move too fast, don't I?
Yes.
Well, I have to explain. These days, this is the only place where I can move too fast. Everything else is slow. How many of you ever get down in the floor and regret it? Used to be so easy. What's that? That's right. You got to have a plan to get back up. I used to be able to sit down, you know, they call it Indian style, cross-legged, and when I wanted to get up, I just pushed myself up. I thought, nothing about that. And now it's, oh, I was an acrobat. Okay, you had enough time to fill in the blanks? I was stalling. Here we go. Number four. Oh, we haven't finished three yet. I'm sorry. To review, in 722 B.C., the kingdom of Israel was taken into captivity by the Assyrians. In 606 B.C., Nebuchadnezzar of the blank Babylonians or Babylon conquered the kingdom of Judah, and took some captives to Babylon. So the Nebuchadnezzar of the Babylonians conquered the kingdom of Judah. Nebuchadnezzar returns to the city of blank, Jerusalem, in 597 B.C. So he comes back to Jerusalem in 597 when he takes more captives. He comes a third time against the city in 586 B.C. when he totally destroys it. And what had happened was he had appointed a vassal king, and that vassal king rebelled, and so he comes back and destroyed the city. And he takes the remaining people to Babylon, the ones that he took, anyway, based on Jeremiah chapter 52. Number five, the following people are taken into Babylonian captivity at what date? Daniel was taken in 606. As were, it sounds, you can even kind of tell this from reading the first chapter, as were the next three young men, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. What were their names? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So they had Israelite names, but they go into captivity, and King Nebuchadnezzar says, we need to give these boys some Chaldean names, some Babylonian names. And that's what they did. How'd you like that? Be hauled off into another country, and when you get there, they say, we're going to give you one of our names. That's what they did. Ezekiel. Well, how did Ezekiel get in here? You ever put Ezekiel together with these four young men? He was part of that same historic event. He goes off into captivity in 597 B.C. The first four are taken in 606. He's taken 9 years later in 597. Yeah. Yeah, it gets confusing. It can get that way. Number six. I'm sorry?
You were taken in 606. And in 597, 606 was before 597.
Yes. Correct. Yes, because you're counting back from Christ, back from zero, basically. The time of the birth of Christ is counted as zero, and then we go back. And I know there's controversy over exactly when Jesus was born, but for our purposes, we're just going to say zero, and that's when we go back to B.C.s, and that's when we go ahead to A.D.s. Number six, in 722 B.C., the blanks destroyed the kingdom of blank. The Babylonians destroyed the kingdom of Judah. Oh, my goodness, I'm so sorry. Is that why you were laughing? Because, all right, yeah. In 722 B.C., the Assyrians, all right, don't let me confuse you on that, destroyed the kingdom of Israel, all right, and sent the people away as captives. Whew. It's the glasses. That's what it is. I'll blame it on the glasses. In 612 B.C., the blanks destroyed the blanks. Babylonians destroyed the Assyrians, of course. In blank B.C. and blank B.C., Nebuchadnezzar took captives to Babylon. 606 and 597. Hopefully you've got those blanks filled in above with Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, and then Ezekiel. He's the odd man out date-wise. In blank B.C., Nebuchadnezzar blanked Jerusalem. 586, Nebuchadnezzar destroyed Jerusalem and took all the remaining people into captivity, the ones that he was taking into captivity. The prophet blank said the Jews would remain in Babylonian captivity for blank years. The prophet Jeremiah said the Jews would remain in Babylonian captivity for 70 years. This means they would start returning in, and you do the math, turns out to be 536 B.C., about that time, which is just exactly what happened. We just finished studying in Mike's class on Ezra and Nehemiah, the return of the Jews to first rebuild the temple and then to rebuild the walls. And all of that was the fulfillment of Jeremiah's prophecy. Let's go take a look at that briefly in Jeremiah chapter 25. We'll start there. I want you to be able to connect some of the dots here if you've not already done that. Jeremiah chapter 25. God sent Jeremiah to try and turn Judah back to righteousness, but they wouldn't have it. So it says in Jeremiah 25 verse 8, "Therefore thus says the Lord of hosts, because you have not obeyed my words, behold, I will send and take all the families of the north, declares the Lord, and I will send to Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, my servant," isn't that interesting, calls Nebuchadnezzar his servant, "and will bring them against this land and against its inhabitants and against all these nations round about. And I will utterly destroy them and make them a horror and a hissing and an everlasting desolation. Moreover, I will take from them the voice of joy and the voice of gladness, the voice of the bridegroom and the voice of the bride, the sound of the millstones and the light of the lamp. And this whole land will be a desolation and a horror. And these nations will serve the king of Babylon." And there it is, 70 years. God, through Jeremiah, put it down in black and white before it ever happened. And then it will be, verse 12, "When 70 years are completed, I will punish the king of Babylon and that nation, declares the Lord, for their iniquity and the land of the Chaldeans, and I will make it an everlasting desolation." And he's going to bring them back. And then you go to chapter 29. And this is a little longer, but chapter 29, verse 4. "Thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, to all the exiles whom I have sent into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon, build houses, live in them, plant gardens, and eat their produce. Take wives, become the fathers of sons and daughters, and take wives for your sons, and give your daughters to husbands, that they may bear sons and daughters and multiply there and do not decrease. Seek the welfare of the city where I have sent you into exile and pray to the Lord on its behalf, for in its welfare you will have welfare. For thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, do not let your prophets who were in your midst and your diviners deceive you, and do not listen to the dreams which they dream, for they prophesy falsely to you in my name. I have not sent them, declares the Lord. For thus says the Lord, when 70 years have been completed for Babylon, I will visit you and fulfill my good word to you to bring you back to this place. For I know the plans that I have for you." Oh, does this sound familiar? See, this is the context of this passage that's become so popular. "I know the plans for you, declares the Lord. Plans for welfare and not for calamity, to give you a future and a hope. And then you will call upon me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you, and you will seek me and find me when you search for me with all your heart. I will be found by you, declares the Lord, and I will restore your fortunes and will gather you from all the nations, from all the places where I've driven you, declares the Lord, and I will bring you back to the place from which I sent you into exile." So here's God saying through Jeremiah, this is what's going to happen. You guys have been bad, so I'm sending the Babylonians to wipe you guys out, take you into captivity. Jerusalem's going to be wiped out. You're going to think it's the end of the world, but it's not. You're going to go into exile, and this is by my authority. And then after 70 years, I'm bringing you back. And you're going to rebuild everything. While you're in exile, what do you in exile? You live your life. You build houses. You plant gardens. You take wives. You give your you take wives for your sons. And then when the 70 years is up, you'll be ready to come back. And so when we're reading Nehemiah, and they talk about thousands of Israelites being prepared to come back, things have changed in that 70 years. They have grown. They have prospered. They have proliferated. Remember, what happened when they went to Egypt? How many went down to Egypt to start with? 75. Jacob's family, 75 in number, went down to Egypt. And what happened before too long? Pharaoh said, man, there are too many Israelites around here. We're going to have to do something. How about if we make slaves out of them? They can build all our stuff. And that's what happened there. So when God blesses his people in this way, they proliferate. By the way, this means all you young couples need to be having babies. That's what I'm getting out of this. So starting to meddle here, but it's all right. We like babies, don't we? All right. So you can see how all this fits together. God's telling his people this is what's going to happen. Don't be alarmed. I mean, how can you not be alarmed when a foreign army is coming into your nation and taking everything for themselves? But he's saying, this is my will. This is the way I'm planning this. 70 years, I'm bringing you back. And I would be saying, well, I'll be dead. But if God is the one who's important to me, I'd be saying, that's okay. I don't need to be there. God's will needs to be fulfilled. I'm going to teach my children. I'm going to teach my grandchildren. You put your life in the hands of God and you trust him. He will take care of you. In 70 years, what happened to Nebuchadnezzar? He lost out to the Persians, and Cyrus came on the throne. And Cyrus is the one who said, hey, Nehemiah, what's your problem, man? He said, oh, my hometown's in a mess. And he said, well, why don't you get your people together, and I'll give you some money and send you back, and you can rebuild all that stuff. What? What? Yeah, that's what happened. God said, this is the way it's going to be. He said that through Isaiah. So this is how God is always working out his plan. We think we're just reading about Daniel and these four guys in captivity, but we're reading about a very integral part of God's plan. And I want you to think about Daniel's spirit, his attitude. He's young. But I believe he knows what Jeremiah has said. He'll talk about that in Daniel chapter 9. He'll say, just like Jeremiah said, 70 years, we're coming back. But I got an idea. He must have known some of these things even in his youth. I don't know how he learned it. I have to wonder if he had some parents that were teaching him and saying, now, son, we need to listen to God's prophets. The world's a mess right now. And we're in the minority because we're trying to be faithful to him. But it's going to be all right. You just put your faith in the Lord. I wonder if he had parents that said something to him like that. Or maybe an uncle or grandparents or somebody. I don't know how. But these boys not only knew the law, because what happened when they tried to feed him in Babylon, the things that were not fit for Israelites? They said, we cannot defile ourselves. And it's interesting, if you look at how Daniel does this, I have great respect for him because of the way he handled the situation. He didn't rant and rage and say, I absolutely refuse. I've got religious convictions. None of that stuff. It just simply says in verse 8, Daniel chapter 1, verse 8, we're back there. Daniel made up his mind. He was deliberate about it. That he would not defile himself with the king's choice food or with the wine which he drank. So he did what? He sought permission. He didn't make demands. He sought permission. There was a guy in charge, and he went to him, the commander, whose name was Ashpenaz. He goes to Noxon, hello, Ashpenaz, come on in. And he says, I would like to have permission not to eat the things that we've been provided, but if you would just give us some what? Vegetables and water. This is because Burger King had not yet been invented. No, this is because, and it doesn't say, there's not another verse that explains this. But let me just ask you, why do you think he would say vegetables and water? It would be speculation, so you can speculate freely. Charles?
I assume you can't sacrifice it.
Okay. Doesn't have to worry about this being an animal that's been sacrificed to an idol god. Any other reason?
Good stuff.
It's good stuff, yeah. Get some fresh vegetables and... take the seeds and do what? Yes, you can take the seeds and plant a garden. That's true, too. He would be fulfilling what Jeremiah had said. Bud?
The smart one over here said kosher food.
Kosher food, yeah. Well, that's the thing. Vegetables are safe. There are no vegetables that the law said, you can't eat that. Oh, how I wish it did. But it doesn't say anything about Brussels sprouts or broccoli. So it's considered food. Any meat, you wouldn't necessarily know what it was. Like in the military, mystery meat. And you go through the chow hall and you get that stuff. You go, what is it? Just eat it, son. Just eat it.
Mystery meat was spelled
S-P-A-M. I grew up on Spam. Yeah. It was good. Oh, man, don't get me started on thinking about that kind of stuff now. Fried Spam, mayonnaise sandwiches. Oh, I digress. So here is Daniel, and this is the kind of spirit that he has. He goes to the guy in charge, and he seeks permission. He doesn't make demands. He's not ugly and hateful about this. He doesn't make faith in God and the keeping of his ways an ugly thing in the minds of the people who see. You ever know Christians who do that? They talk about what Jesus teaches in such a way that people, I don't want to be part of that. What's a Christian, by the way? How do we define a Christian? A Christian is somebody who doesn't smoke, doesn't drink, doesn't dance, doesn't cuss. Is that how the Bible defines a Christian? What's a Christian? Somebody who puts their faith in Jesus Christ, who follows him, who keeps his teachings. What are his teachings? The weightier things, the law, are justice, mercy, faithfulness. Those are what Jesus said were the heavy things of the law. Love, loving God, loving your neighbor, treating everyone as you would like to be treated yourself, doing unto others as you would have them do unto you. Those are the things of Jesus Christ, and those are the things that we should be practicing today that will make Jesus Christ attractive to the world. That's how we can find an opening, make an opening for his gospel. And when we read about Daniel, I see that kind of a spirit with him. Not making demands, not being ugly, not being hateful, not being holier than thou, but saying, would it be okay if we did this? And then the commander, what's a commander say when he says vegetables and water? He says, man, you're going to get me killed. And what's Daniel say? Let's just try it. Ten days. Give us 10 days. What's that?
In verse 10, it says Daniel found compassion.
Yes. Some of that is God. I think some of it's just Daniel and God working through Daniel. You remember when Joseph was put into prison and the text says God gave Joseph favor in the eyes of the jailer? Some of that's God, but I think some of it's Joseph. Joseph had to be living a life of faith and humility for that to happen. But God will do that. And God still does that, I believe. If we're behaving towards the people of this world as we ought to be behaving towards them as Christians, I believe God will help them to see, hey, this is a good person. This is a good citizen. This is someone you can trust. This is someone you should help. I believe God still does that. And when we behave as God would have us to behave, I think we open the door to blessings that we might not have thought about getting otherwise. Blessings we wouldn't perhaps think about asking for. All right. Any observations, any comments, any questions about anything we've covered so far? What do you think of the repetition? Don't think anything about it? All right. Well, let me just ask, what's that? Let me ask a couple of questions then. Tell me something about the Assyrians. Old Hal says, oh, we can't do this. We got to ring the bell fast before he gets back here. Tell me something about the Assyrians. They carried Israel away captive, the 10 northern tribes. When did they do that? 722 B.C. So who conquered the Assyrians? The Babylonians. Do you remember when the Babylonians conquered the Assyrian Empire? 612 B.C. What happened 6 years after Nebuchadnezzar conquered the Assyrians? That's a tricky way to ask it, isn't it? He comes to Judah for the first time, and he takes captives away. Who might have been among those captives taken away in 606 B.C.? Daniel? Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego? All right. How does Ezekiel fit into this?
He was captured 9 years later.
Okay. He was captured later. And when these four boys were taken into captivity, they were taken into the royal court and trained to serve in the royal court. Ezekiel, however, went among the captives. When you start reading Ezekiel's work, that's what he says. By the river Chebar in Babylon. There used to be a song. I haven't heard it in a long time, but it was very popular when it first came out back in the 70s. By the rivers of Babylon, where we sat down, oh, there we wept when we remembered Zion. That's scripture. That's the Bible. And that reflects the reality of Ezekiel's work among the exiles in Babylon. All right. Anybody got anything else? But
one of the things that I remember as I studied the situation was Israel was and still is a key city in that area.
Mm-hmm.
It's a key city.
Right.
In other words, you want to get on this side of the mountain, you got to go through it. You want to go somewhere else, you got to go through it. So it was a key point in history that Israel was there and was, everything went to Israel. If they want to go this north, south, east, or west, you got to go through Israel.
All right. When you read about Abraham in Genesis 12, and he's in Ur of the Chaldees, and he says, get up and I'm going to take you to, he goes north up to Haran, and then he keeps going north because if he had just gone west, he'd have hit the desert. And that's the way people traveled. They took the routes that were easiest to follow. Also, not just easy to follow, but there were things like water and towns, because a town meant safety and security. As you're traveling, you could go to a town, you could go through the gate in the walls, and you're safe from the bandits and the bad guys on the outside. There'd be a place for you to stay, water for your animals and your people, food for your animals. That's why I believe when Jesus was talking about Christians, he said we need to be salt, we need to be light, we need to be what else? Cities on hills. Cities on hills. People could see you from a long ways off and say, there's a place I can find solace there. And that's what we need to be in this world. All right. Class dismissed.